Number two, open public input. We have a number of individuals. Most of you are familiar with the rules of the engagement here. 3 minutes, the buzzer will go off. You have an opportunity to finish a sentence or two. After 30 seconds or 15 seconds, that privilege goes away. So we've got to keep it equitable for all. So with those rules in effect, we will call Dan Paul and Lawrence Buckland, please. So Dan, you take the mic, and then Lawrence, you'll be the next in line. I'll call you up two at a time.
Thank you, Chair Smith. Is this on?
Members of the Commission, Director Unsworth, my name is Dan Paul. I'm the Washington State Director for the Humane Society of the United States. I'm just here to testify just to speak to you all about the recent decision made on April 10th and then sort of reiterated on the conference call May 1st to increase the cougar hunting quota in areas occupied by wolves. We're just very disappointed in that decision. I've submitted a letter to the Commission. I have some testimony I can also give you as well, but just to sort of cut down to it, to claim social tolerance for this issue, we know through polling done by the department in 2010 that 92% of Washingtonians support cougars on the landscape. Only 8% think that they should be hunted for depredation purposes. It's available here in the Cougar Outreach and Education Guide, and so it's the decision. It really does sort of create more fear for the species, and it's not about that. It's about education. We're not happy about how the decision was made through an amendment as well, without the public having a chance to talk about it. So appreciate the roles that you guys all have and the work that you do. But we just really have big concerns with this choice and hope that you vacate that decision, and certainly don't extend the pilot program. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dan. Vlad Gutman, please. Lawrence, it's up to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and commissioners. I didn't come here this morning prepared to speak, so this is not going to be as coherent a presentation as I would like to have for you. But I'm here to talk about Point No Point launch on the northern tip of the Kitsap Peninsula, for those of you who may not know where that is. It's a prime fishing area. It's a prime access area, even for people from Tacoma and down here who can go across the bridge and not fight Pugetropolis and have access. This was a commercial boat facility years ago, small boat launch resort. The department purchased it with RCO funds many years ago. I don't have the timeline, but it's been 10 years at least. This thing has been in the process, which is why I'm here. It was designed. There was designed with an RCO money to be a trailer boat launch. With concerns from adjacent property owners, the county initially fought issuing a permit. The department started to move towards a car topper canoe type launch. When the local sport fishers found out about it, that was redirected back to the original design, which was a trailer boat launch. The permitting process went forward. Kitsap County issued a permit. Then it moved to the state level. I can tell you that NOAA has issued a no significant issue finding to the Corps. The Corps is sitting on its hands, not issuing the necessary permit for the below waterline work, pending a resolution of issues between the tribes and the department. And now we're getting to the nut here. They wanted money for prospective damages. That was denied. They wanted more money for or more mitigation within their UNA. The department has worked with them on that. The hang-up is the tribe has objected that it will adversely affect their ability to exercise their treaty rights. And that's where we sit. It's been over a year that there's been no movement that has come from the department, at least in my communications with them, on that issue. The permit time is running out with the county. It's a year from June. The open construction period is in the summer, which means if it doesn't happen this summer, now there are issues with Kitsap County. There's issues with the funding, which was the last money for the upland portion was jobs, one of the jobs incentive bills from several years ago. That money is running out. So I'm here to bring this to your attention. We need this ramp. We need more public access as we're losing it elsewhere on saltwater. And I would ask you to look into this issue and talk to the department and get back to those of us. I'm here representing Puget Sound Anglers. So my time is up. Thank you very much. If I have any questions.
I've been following this issue, and it's very disturbing not only to me but to the recreational fishing community and others in the county that use that boat ramp or have used it in the past. I understand that the negotiations have been going forward with the Suquamish tribe, and I guess I've been remiss in not asking the question of the department as to where we are in those negotiations with the Suquamish tribe.
Actually, I think the commission is going to look at part of the mitigation property today or tomorrow. So the wheels are still turning, although slowly. And we have been working with the tribe recently and have another meeting set up for this summer, so soon. So.
Yeah, I have some fairly strong personal opinions on what they're asking for. Which is, as I recall, they are concerned about potential impact on their commercial fisheries of a boat ramp that's used primarily by local people and the recreational fishing community. And I know that the department has the same concerns. And I would like to know as soon as possible just exactly where those negotiations have gone and what's stalling them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been following this to some degree as well, and there's a great deal of unhappiness out there amongst the people that the taxpayers that have stepped forward and contributed a lot of sweat equity in trying to get this thing done. And I would strongly encourage the director to move on this in the spirit of getting something completed that needs to be done.
Other comments? I think the message is clear then. Thank you, Lawrence. Norm Reinhart, come forward, please. Mr. Gutman, it's yours.
Thank you very much. My name is Vlad Gutman. I am the relatively new senior policy director at the Washington Wildlife and Recreation Coalition. As you know, we focus on getting funding, securing funding for the Washington Wildlife and Recreation Program, which provides a lot of support for DFW capital projects across the state. It's been a pretty challenging year for the program so far. We were heartened by the governor's proposal for $70 million for the program while preserving the program's integrity, and the House's increase over that level to $75 million while also preserving the program's integrity. The Senate appropriated in their capital budget relatively high $69 million but didn't protect the integrity of the program, and DFW is probably is the most affected agency as a result. Cuts included a total of about $24 million worth of projects, DFW proposed projects in critical habitat, state lands restoration, riparian categories, and urban wildlife. Like I said, that makes DFW the most impacted. It's more impacted than DNR or state parks is, and certainly than the local governments that participate as well. We're working to restore that funding and are hopeful that we'll be able to do it as this budget session winds down. There's only a few weeks left, or maybe a week left. We don't know. And we work closely with DFW on that. Connected to that, with feedback from the agency, the coalition has proposed a budget proviso that would create an independent and open amendment process for the program to edit and change it for, you know, next several biennia. The last major rewrite was in 2005, so you can hopefully assume that it won't happen again for another decade. We can, you know, choose a stable set of reforms that will stick. Like I said, our proviso calls for an independent open stakeholder process that would be run by RCO and RCFB, but there are some other provisos that are potentially being written by Senators Honeyford and Senator Kaiser as well. So it's not clear how that will net out and what that process will look like, but regardless, the coalition will work with all stakeholders, most especially the agency, to elevate voices and to protect conservation within the program. It's a big priority of the coalition, and it's our belief that the strength of the program comes from the balance between conservation and conservation, wildlife, recreation, and the kind of local recreation projects that it supports. So preserving that's going to be very important. I hope to work with and meet all of you over the coming months. I've been working with the coalition for a few months, so I've been trying to It's been a little bit of drinking from a fire hose. I started right before session, so it's been a fun ride. But anyway, that's all I have, and I'd love to answer any questions, if anything. But thank you. I, like I said, I just wanted to emphasize the partnership that we have with you folks and how valuable that is.
Thank you. Well, welcome to your position, and we look forward to working with you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mitch Friedman? Norm, take it away.
Commissioners, Director, I'm glad to be here, and I'm here about the lands acquisition. Mr. Buck gave you a brief overview of Point No Point. I'm here to really encourage you to buy that piece of property, specifically item two. I would stay for the public testimony portion of that. Unfortunately, I can't. You'll also see me here for PSRAF. I'm camouflaged today. I'm really a fisherman. It's hard to use a tie to catch a salmon, but I could figure out a way. But at any rate, to add to that brief history Mr. Buck gave, I'm that local guy. The Kitsap Pogie Club is that local organization that turned this around from potentially a kayak launch, asking that that property be used for full public access for recreational fishing. First, I understand one of the concerns of the tribe is their ability to access the ramp. The recreationalists that I have talked with have no opposition to anybody launching and retrieving their boats. There is, however, some local concern, specifically amongst the landowners and the county government, concerning direct commercial activity at the launch. That is the offloading of seafood products into refrigerated containers basically whenever they hit the shoreline, which could be 2 in the morning. So there is some concern there. For anyone else, like I said, for using the launch, there are no restrictions. We're all citizens of the state of Washington. So I've also heard there's been some concern that there's no public support for this project, at least no vocal public support. That's why I'm here. Wednesday night, when I asked the Kitsap Pogies at our meeting, and we had approximately 50 people at the meeting, is, do you want me to go to Olympia and tell the commission that we want you to buy this property and let the director know that we're still in full support of this project? I had 50 hands go in the air. There is broad public support locally. There's also regional support. We just heard Tacoma wants this launch for their folks. People from Shelton have told me they'd love to have the launch. People from Port Townsend, of all places, they would love to be able, instead of fishing mid-channel in the winter for blackmouth, come down to Point No Point for a break, a different scenery, so to speak. So there is support there. We just haven't been vocal. We have been content watching the department tried to pursue this. It has been a long, slow process. We appreciate what the department has done so far. We asked the department to purchase this land, the commission to approve this purchase, and let's see this project done by 2016. Thank you.
Thank you, Norm. Questions? Linda Saunders, please. And Mitch, it's your turn.
Mitch Friedman. I direct Conservation Northwest, and I also want to express disappointment at the way the additional cougar take was authorized. Our understanding is the objective was to build social tolerance, and that's a very worthwhile objective. The science of cougars, in which the state is heavily invested, is complicated enough. How cougars respond to hunting pressure, there's a lot of variables there, and how cougars behave when their population are disrupted and dominant toms are removed. That affects social tolerance, and so the science is complicated, and then you add the social science of social tolerance, and that's very poorly understood. The point I'm trying to make is, it's a bit of alchemy how to increase social tolerance. And for the commission to make a decision that increasing the quota will improve tolerance, yeah, maybe it will, maybe it won't. But we in the public observed a process that seemed truncated. We don't know the basis. Were these gut entrails that were consulted or tea leaves? What was the basis of the prediction that this will improve social tolerance? What happens if, the increased pressure upsets the demographics? We do understand that commissioners consulted department staff who said that this increase won't impact the population, but the population isn't the right variable. The sensitivity of cougar demographics to hunting pressure and how they respond behaviorally and how that changed population interacts with the human population, that's something that we ought to be able to at least understand what you were thinking and what information you were tracking in real time as you're doing it and give you feedback. So that's my concern, and I hope that in future we'll have more opportunity to dialogue and understand the commission's decisions on such a complicated topic. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you, Mitch. Paula Sweden and Linda, all yours.
Thank you, Chair, Commission, and Director Unsworth. My name's Linda Saunders. I'm the Director of Conservation for Wolf Haven International. And I've met a lot of you, but not everybody. So, and I'm here also to speak about the decision on cougars that was recently made. That decision was clearly outside the conclusion of best available science. We're concerned that it sets a really dangerous precedence for using social tolerance and not science as a basis for managing our wildlife resources here in Washington. Mitch talked about the consequences of removing experienced members of a cougar population. The same applies to wolves and all of these social carnivores. The loss of experienced animals from these populations can lead to disruption, resulting in more conflicts between the animals and livestock and potentially humans. And using increasing social tolerance as a rationale is disturbing on several levels. And one of those is that there's quite a bit of research that's new right now out on the subject, and I actually included a copy of the latest for each of you that talks about the effects of hunting wolves in Wisconsin and concludes that allowing killing of wolves clearly does not increase social tolerance. And there's also a lot of anecdotal evidence from states like Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming that suggests that social tolerance hasn't been increased despite very liberal hunting and trapping seasons in those states. And conclusions can certainly be applied to other predators. So it's difficult to see the connection between how increasing the possibility of conflict between humans and cougars by allowing a higher cougar harvest will increase social tolerance of any predators by the very people that are affected. Second, killing more of one apex predator to appease the public over the presence of another has absolutely no basis in science and, again, sets bad precedents for future carnivore management in our state. Commission has an opportunity to pause and reevaluate the recent decision to increase hunting quotas for cougars in GMUs where wolves are also present. We ask that quotas adopted for our hunted wildlife be based on best available science and not on alleged benefits in the form of increased social tolerance for one apex carnivore at the expense of another. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you, Linda. And Bob McCoy, please. And Paula.
Good morning, Chair Smith, members of the Commission. My name is Paula Sweden. I'm the Carnivore Policy Lead for Conservation Northwest. I wanted to make a few comments also about the cougar issue and a few more general comments about decision-making processes. I understand what it's like to sit in your chairs. I serve on the State Forest Practices Board, and I've been on that board for the last 5 years. I wanted to make a couple comments about my personal experience as a citizen on that board, and so just wanted to make clear that what I'm saying, I'm not representing the board as a whole. We need to follow the same Administrative Procedures Act rules that you all do in making your decisions. In the 5 years that I've been on that board, we have never made a CR 103 decision that was not thoroughly vetted through stakeholder groups and that was changed right at the day of the decision-making process. And it following that pattern of making sure that all of the stakeholders affected understand what's in the CR 103 by the time it gets to the decision-making process is something that has reduced surprise and has reduced conflict among stakeholders. And I would just ask, the Cougar decision was an example of a CR 103 being changed the day of decision. And I would just respectfully recommend that not doing that will increase the public's confidence in your decision-making process. And then I also wanted to note one other thing about lots of our decision-making processes is our stakeholder groups are open to the public, and most if not all rules that we make are recommended by committees that have members of the public on them, and those meetings are always open to the public. And that's another thing that helps us have a large amount of stakeholder buy-in in what we do. So it's just another thing to recommend for your consideration about decision making and rule making. And finally, on the social tolerance piece, I just wanted to make a positive note of the work that the Wolf Advisory Group is making on trying to make steps towards increasing social tolerance. And I serve on that committee as well. And, we've expanded the group to 18 recently and have begun work with trying to do a technique called conflict transformation. And we had our first meeting a couple weeks ago in Spokane. And I just wanted to report to you that we have made tremendous progress. The meetings that I attended last year were the interactions between the different stakeholders were stilted, and it's night and day. We have been able to talk to each other and interact in a way that I think is heading towards this social tolerance, and it's all about the deep work of building relationships and trust. And I just wanted to thank you for your support for that process and let you know that it's going well. Thank you,
Paula. Any questions yet?
Yeah. Mr. Keeney? Thank you, Chair. Paula, I had a quick question. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you followed the direction of this, what passed, the discussions on it. And as I understand it, it's not a bill or a rule that will affect the population. But it was pointed out previously, it could affect distribution, territorialism of cougars. Mm-hmm. The numbers by GMU are not huge, but they do go above a percentage rate, I think. It drives them above a percentage rate that the science has said we should keep it at.
Mm-hmm.
So I think where we've left off as a commission is to, take into advisement the type of testimony we're hearing today and then come next year at the March meeting, review what has happened through this hunting season, hopefully have some hard data as to how many cougars actually were taken under this rule, and actually have some hard data on incidents that may have increased or decreased or whatever, mm-hmm. and relook at it. from your standpoint, on a from a commission standpoint, because you serve on those as well, does that fit what you think the commission now should do?
That's a good question, and I think a concern that that several of us in our community have is you know, giving the ability for an increased rate of take in those GMUs and then taking it back also may not be something that that creates a lot of good feelings in those communities. So I think our preference would be to not have the increase even for a season. You know, but if it's too late for that, then certainly monitoring the effects of the decision and you know, trying to see what happens with it and getting good data, and then having a you know a full discussion of that, and you know a consideration and a new rulemaking process a year from now would you know that that would be a good way to do it. But I think the preference you know obviously would have been to have not done that at all. But if that's the next best, then right.
Any other commissioner comments? Yes.
Where to begin? I think the idea of having a more in-depth dialogue about what we're trying to accomplish as we manage predators is always a good idea. There was a perception here that there were some procedural flaws. I've gone on the record saying that I don't believe that there were any procedural flaws. We do make adjustments, which we consider minor, to the rules that have been proposed because they are just draft rules, and we can't restrict, we can't constrain the commission from making small changes in the rules. That would present a process that doesn't make sense if we are the decision makers. So we have to have some discretion to make small adjustments as we consider rulemaking. More significant changes, I agree, should be taken back to the public for their input because we don't want to we don't want to mislead the public about what we are considering. That would be a procedural flaw to do that. So when we were, when it was explained to us that the slight change upward would have no impact on the health of the population, that was a significant factor that we took into account. This would have no effect on the health of the cougar populations. The idea that hunting destabilizes and causes increases in conflicts with people is not settled science. I think I think some people try to portray it as settled science, as something that has a long history and it's well established by the studies that have been done, and that is not what staff's position is on that subject. And that was articulated when we adopted the modification upward. That part of it is not settled science. And it's hard for me to imagine that, you know, given that hunting may lead to more immature animals being taken, not just the mature cougars, then it's just hard to predict what effect the slight change upward would actually lead to. And we will be looking at the effect. So we've agreed to do that. I think that covers the uncertainty factor about what we've done. The point about social tolerance, I just want to put this on the table. When I made the motion to amend, I referred to it not as a way to give consideration to those communities that are living in a neighborhood that now has another apex predator. We've been hearing from them that they would like to see more aggressive predator management. They would have liked to have seen us go further than we went. We're not willing to go beyond what the science tells us would be acceptable in terms of the health of the cougar population. So I believe very strongly that we based our decision on good science and the science that the staff was providing us information about. Whether the communities are ever going to feel comfortable having both wolves, cougars, bears, predators in their neighborhood, I think that's probably pretty unlikely. There's always going to be some human conflicts. So I don't, that isn't the rationale that I was proposing. I see it as just we need to find ways to listen to both communities. And you're all representing your views very well. We understand what the views are from those who want to see healthy populations of predators on the landscape. We agree there should be healthy populations of predators on the landscape, but we have communities that are affected by predators too, and we don't want to just be deaf to their concerns. So this was a long-winded way of me explaining that this wasn't about trying, this wasn't an expectation that by doing this we were going to see no one complaining ever again. This was a way to show that we're listening to them too.
Thank you for your additional explanation.
Any other commissioners' comments? Thanks, Paula. Grace Stiller, please come forward. And Bob, it's your 3 minutes.
Hi, I'm Bob McCoy, Sammamish, Washington. Here for myself. I also volunteer for Mountain Lion Foundation, trying to represent their views up here. I've read the draft supplemental environmental statement very carefully on issues relating to apex carnivores. Saw that the staff had basically recommended no changes. Was able to live with it because it falls within the science. Had concerns about the doubling of spring bear hunts in some areas when there had been no complaints from timber companies about it. Then on the CR 101 said, well, we're looking at various wildlife issues. 102, 103, 103 said, well, we're going to increase the cougar season by a month, which is 12.5% increase in time to go after a wide-ranging and low-population type species. Also had very much concern about putting that in another month into the time when ungulates are very susceptible to starvation by using extra calories trying to avoid conflict, because that's where the cougars are going to be. So I just feel that we did not get an opportunity then when we heard the increase of quotas above the 16%, especially when the science coming out of the state of Washington, $5 million, 13 years, published papers, and what we have in the published science is we recommend using the range of 12 to 14% intrinsic rate of growth rather than the upper limit of 16% to account for undocumented mortality. So this was the recommendation of biologists from the department, and then what we saw was, well, we went to 16%. We let the GMUs run over in the Metau area, and we had started seeing more complaints. Also from research, we base our recommendations on research from Washington that shows that a high harvest rate strategy may not accomplish local population reductions, which is a point that was just made, and which I agree with, but may result in altering the age structure and social organization of the population. We have some agreement there. And then it says, this may have unplanned consequences for cougar prey dynamics and cougar human conflict. And this is not settled science. And this is why we feel that we should vacate this decision, go back to what was presented in the supplemental EIS. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Commissioner, questions? No. Thank you. Ellen Dorfman, please come forward. And Grace, it's your 3 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity, Mr. Chair, Commissioners, and Director. I am Grace Diller from Burien, Washington. I founded a nonprofit. Weed Warriors, our main program, is educational, and the name of that program is Nature Stewards, where we educate about living in harmony with nature and understanding the ecosystem that supports wildlife and how we interact with the Pacific Northwest species. In hearing both sides and understanding that science is very important in making a decision and the research that goes into it, and I understand that there's been quite a bit of funding put into the research already, and I hear from biologists and other scientists that attest to the fact that perhaps this decision was made and should be reconsidered. I also lived in Newcastle for a while, which is close to Cougar Mountain, and understand some of the issues there. I think one of the most important things from an educator's standpoint is how we interact with that, with the species that are predators, and the education around understanding those issues. To me, public perception has a lot to do with how the issues are presented, and understanding of living in harmony with nature is really important. Raising the kill limit right away implies that that it is a predator to not be understood, but to be taken advantage of, to be annihilated, and I think that raises totally the wrong perception. I'd like to see that the science is looked at, and of course, input from the community is really important. And so, I would ask that you reconsider, and hope it's not too far down the line to not increasing that kill limit, or looking at the establishing a pilot program that increases that. But perhaps look again at the research that has been done and what could be done in the future, and dovetailing that with education outreach and how the public perceives the decisions that are made to control a species such as the cougar or the mountain lion. And I thank you for the opportunity, and we would definitely like to hear how this is resolved. So we'll be following as an organization, Nature Stewards and the Weed Warriors. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Grace. Any questions from the commission? Thank you. Calling up George Sickle, please. And Ellen, it's your turn.
I urge the commission to manage cougar and other wildlife according to science and not cave to special interests such as the Washington Residents Against Wolves. As Don Paul said, 92% of Washingtonians are against killing predators at all. And you could save a lot of money and just stop killing them, and you'll see that the killing livestock is extremely rare, and ranchers are already entitled to compensation through state funds. They've found through science that hunting cougars does nothing to help ranchers experience livestock's loss. Instead, the science shows that intense cougar hunting increases the chance of livestock loss. WDFW concluded back in 2002 that it had far too little information about cougar populations to determine how to best manage them. and development continues to push farther into higher altitude areas with some of the best mountain lion habitats remain. Well, if people don't want conflicts with cougars, don't live there. I live a mile and a half from downtown Olympia. The biggest thing that ever happens here is the deer eat my raspberry bushes. So don't live there if you don't like it. I mean, it's very simple. But don't move there and tell us to keep increasing killings when 92% of Washingtonians don't want any predators killed. That's not 55%. That's 92%. And 13 years and $5 million later, more than a dozen peer-reviewed studies offer clear and compelling evidence that protecting adult cougars is the key to conserving their social structure and maintaining viable populations. And contrary to the livestock industry, which already gets to graze their animals nearly freely, the best way to control cougar attacks on livestock is to not kill the adults. And hunting disrupts cougars' age sex structure, leaving behind younger males who find their own territory and they're more likely to engage in livestock depredations and or maybe human conflicts than in adult stable populations. Following pressure from a very vocal minority, very small minority, to extend the cougar hunting season, the new proposal by WDFW is ignoring the research. The commission adopted a substantially different rule that would result in far more death to the cougars by increasing the quota by approximately 50% in some areas for the 2015 to 17 season. This drastic change came with no warning to the public, who were given no prior notice, and the change was even under consideration and provided no opportunity for us to offer our comments. According to WDFW, they assured the commission that the season changes would probably not change cougar population size, but would likely result in a population with fewer adults, more subadults, and therefore the loss of territorial behavior of adult male. And this statement is in direct conflict with the findings of the best available and most recent research, which shows that older adults are likely less to engage in conflict behavior. Therefore, creating a population with more subadults, younger males, increases territorial conflicts. Thank you. And I'm one of the 92% who say, stop hunting predators. Save yourself a lot of money. People don't want conflicts. Don't live in those areas. It's simple.
Thank you, Helen.
Thank you.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate all the passion that's being brought forward by the people involved, and I'm understanding of that. But I think it's fair to say, and at least I'll make this statement, that 92% is probably made from a more primarily up and down the I-5 corridor. And I want to remind people, those of you that didn't attend the meeting that we had over in the Tri-Cities last fall, we were dealing then with the farmers and ranchers and the people that are getting their resources gutted. And it was the most impassioned families, children, local elected officials, county commissioners. It was the other side of the fence, if you will. And it was really an eye-opener. And I'm not suggesting that either side is 100% right. Somewhere in the middle is a happy medium. And we have a lot of really tough decisions that we have to make. And we don't take that lightly. I want to make that really clear. And it may not be a perfect world. But the people that live over in the trenches that are third, fourth, fifth generation farmers and ranchers, they also have a dog in this fight. And please understand that we're trying to find somewhere to land on this stuff.
And that's why ranchers are compensating for a loss from state funds. That's in place, correct?
Yes, ma'am. That's correct.
Other commissioners have comments, questions? Thank you, Ellen. Calling up George Sickle, please.
My name is George Sickle. I'm from...
calling up Sean Cunt. Cantrell, thank you. That won't count against you.
I'm from Brennan, Washington. I'm here representing the Brennan Parks and Rec District. I'm here to talk about three different issues, and we're going to talk about things in the water as opposed to things on the land. The first is, I hope you all have seen the 1,000-plus signatures that we received over... the course of 3 months last year about opening bottom fishing, and I know you're going to be talking about the possibilities of opening it up to flatfish. I sincerely hope that you saw the public comment regarding what's going to be opened and where the line's going to be drawn. The second thing that I'd like to talk about is the closure of Hood Canal to any kind of shellfish harvesting. I understand DeBab Bay has been reopened for clams and oysters. What we're facing in Brennan is we're a community that really focuses and counts on recreational harvesting of fish and shellfish. And when we have closures like that, it gets real frustrating for all the vacationers in the summertime and the businesses up there. Also, when we see tribal harvesters out there in the same area that we have been told has been closed, and we're not getting feedback from Fish and Game on openings and closures. We get it from Department of Health, and we have to go out and look at their website. And the third item I'd like to talk about is Point Whitney Shellfish Labs. Fish and Wildlife has leased that facility to a commercial entity, and they are taking in over $100,000 a year in rent for that facility, and yet it's not being kept up. The bathrooms are not kept up. The boat ramp is not kept up, and it gets frustrating for us as residents and business owners in Brennan. All obviously with Park and Rec District that we're trying to promote things where we bring people into the community in the summertime for recreational, and all these things are really flying in the face of what we're trying to accomplish. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, George. And Sean, you have the last word.
Thank you. I'm Sean Cantrell. I'm the Northwest Director for Defenders of Wildlife. I want to touch on a few topics. I'll lead with the positive. You heard a bit ago about the Wolf Advisory Group. I also have the pleasure of serving on that. We did have a very positive, productive two-day session over in Spokane a few weeks ago. And just yesterday, all 18 members sent a letter to legislators where, again, a very diverse set of stakeholders all were able to find common language, and we sent a letter to legislators. I have copies that I'll leave here with your staff so that you will have a copy. But again, it's small steps, it's baby steps, but it is encouraging that we are finding ways to reach out together and collaborate and hopefully break down some of this conflict and get through a transformation process on conflict there. So that's the good news on wolves. Second thing I wanted to touch on is marbled murrelets and spotted owls. I think I touched base with you back in March when you met in Tumwater. I noted the significant continuing decline of those species. Just this week, a 20-year review of the monitoring of those species came out. There's a day-long science session in Vancouver, Washington, and the particularly troubling news is both those critters are continuing to see significant declines, and across their range, the worst place is Washington. So I would encourage you to encourage the department to step up and do more specifically on those two critters. And there are specific things that can and should be done by the department that are in their purview on you know, it's not just the federal lands. Federal lands will be the backbone of recovery of both of those species. But the loss of habitat on non-federal lands for the murrelet is 27% of the habitat in Washington has been lost in the last 20 years. Spotted owls have declined 77% in the last 20 years in Washington state. So I encourage you to work with the department staff to see how you can do things. And the department has a board seat on the Forest Practices Board where they can and should be looking at the rules and regulations, monitoring the health of these species. The Department of Natural Resources is going through a long-term conservation strategy development. Again, the department can help assist, make sure that that is a strong, viable strategy that can stop this decline and hopefully get us on an upward trend for those two species. And then the last thing I would just mention is, I won't go into detail because you've heard lots, but again, on the cougars, I would just concur that both the concerns about some of the substance of the decision that the board made, but in particular the process of trying to find a way to make sure that what may have been perceived as a small change, as I think you're hearing, is perceived by many of the stakeholders as a very significant change, and would encourage you to revisit that issue if possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Yes.
And this is not pertaining to you. I would just like to personally thank Miranda and Larry for their comments on this cougar issue. One thing I'm not going to let stand is your suggestion that ranchers, and I are one, get compensated for loss of livestock to predators. Ma'am, we run in big country, and it's private property where I run my cattle. We're not out there counting cows every day, so if one comes up missing, it's generally a week or two or a month before we find out, and then trying to prove that. So, no, we are not compensated for predator loss. Maybe in a wolf issue, if it's confirmed wolf, yes, but everything else, we eat out of our own pocket. And there again, everybody keeps talking about the science. We talked with Donnie on this. There's some ranges. And I felt that Donnie thought we were well within our range, didn't make it. And like Miranda pointed out, it was an insignificant change. Living in our world where we are, we feel pressure. There's no doubt about it. And a good friend of mine lost a lot of sheep last year. And like Larry said, if you could have been there and see how devastating it was to their business, it would have resonated with you. Because, I mean, they just started out with nothing and tried to build something up. And it's heart-wrenching to put your whole life into something and then just watch it go up in smoke. So I know you guys have your point of view, but there again, dang near all of you live in the I-5 corridor. Come over and live in my world for a while, and it's a different, you have a different perspective. So thank you.
Commissioner Keeney.
John's just thinking we're just going to drill him with questions, but as long as you're sitting there,
I'm happy to jump in, but you guys are going to do plenty, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'd like to come back to, there were some comments made about, Western Washington, Eastern Washington predators. You know, you may not want to live there. I guess I'd like to point out some more research that's going on with WDFW is leading this research on cougars in Western Washington. And I think predators don't necessarily know there's a Western and Eastern Washington. They exist everywhere. And I think wolves will eventually be in Western Washington. And it won't be an Eastern-Western issue at all. It'll be how do we all live with predators and get along with them as best we can. That research is fascinating. In fact, I think you'd be surprised. There's probably cougars a lot closer to where you live, ma'am, than you think, as well as wandering through Snoqualmie and into the outskirts of Renton. That presentation by a WDFW researcher is fascinating and shows, you know, a larger population of older cats. And they seem to be getting along without a lot of conflict in Western Washington. So I think that's something for us to think about. Is this really a difference between Eastern and Western, or is it a difference of how we look at predators? And sure, I think where there's livestock out on large ranges, there's going to be more conflict. But predators are right in your backyard in Western Washington as well. So I think we need to consider that and think it through that this is about bears. I mean, they're everywhere. They're not just an Eastern Washington thing. They're Western, Eastern, and there's just as much conflict with bears on the west side as there is on the east side. So I'd like to bring it back to that the commission consider predators, and it's not so much a Eastern-Western philosophy. We got to learn to get along with them however we can and use the best science that we have. So I don't have a question for you, Sean. I just wanted to say that.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just make a very brief comment to Commissioner. I hear what you say, in particular about Mr. DeShiel, who you referenced. He is one of the members of the Wolf Advisory Group, as are other livestock producers from the eastern side of the state. And we are having that dialogue. And so I would encourage that as a, again, it's far from getting to a conclusion that we're all in agreement on, but it's very encouraging. And I think that same approach can work on cougars, on bears, on any other conflict that we may have. So I hear you, and I agree that we do need to listen to them just as they need to listen to us. And the conflict transformation process that the WAG is attempting to go through, that is the goal of having all of us hear each other and find common ground.
Thank you, Sean. Mr. Mankin.
Yeah, Sean, this is going to be an easy question for you to answer. you talked about a 27% decline in the spotted owl in Washington State. Was that the number?
That 27% was for the marbled murrelet, okay. The loss of habitat on non-federal lands.
Okay, what was it for the spotted owl?
Not 77%.
77%. I'm horrified.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I hear now that we have problems with the barred owl, which is preempting territory from the spotted owl, and now we're going to go out and shoot barred owls. Is that living in harmony with wildlife?
I'm sorry, you said it was going to be an easy question? So I can tell you that, yes, the spotted owl challenge is twofold. Well, there's multiple aspects, but there's two huge driving factors in spotted owl decline. Loss of habitat, which has slowed because primarily it's slowed on the federal lands, but loss on non-federal land of habitat continues to be a major problem, and that's what the science report just said down in Vancouver this week. But you point out the other huge challenge that the spotted owl is facing is the non-native barred owl. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is currently in the middle of an analysis. They're doing on-the-ground research to see if you go in and you take out barred owls, will that provide a temporary release valve for spotted owls so that we can hopefully stabilize the population. Controversial. I can tell you that there will be some groups here in this room who probably will not support barred owl removal, and some of us, my own organization included, that have said we need to look at it. You know, if it will work, if it can provide a bridge to a longer solution where we can grow up the habitat. Problem is that owl habitat isn't something you get back in 5 years, 10 years. It takes 40 to 50 years before you're beginning to get to cut over land that is starting to be able to support spotted owls. And really, it's 80 to 100 years. So removal of barred owls, my organization thinks, will be a necessary interim step. But, yeah, it's a huge challenge.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Wecker.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll leave the letter from the WAG to the legislators with the staff.
Thanks, yeah. Sean.
Thank you.
I was wondering if we could get Nate up and ask Nate some questions about the testimony that we've just heard. one question for you, Nate, is, you know, we've heard a couple people refer to a survey indicating that the vast majority of Washingtonians don't want us to be killing predators at all. And that doesn't jive with what I recall we learned in our survey on the wolf issue, where close to 68% were supportive of wolf management, including lethal removal. So where do you think this 90-some percent against predator removal figure comes from? Is that is there a survey that shows that?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Wecker, I would want to look back at the stats. That's I heard someone quote the Cougar Outreach and Education Manual. Certainly we have three public opinion surveys that we cited within the Wolf Conservation Management Plan adopted in 2011, as well as we have two recent surveys for just the general Washington public, as well as Washington hunters, that was conducted in the summer of 2014. So without having those documents in front of me, I would rather not speculate.
Okay. And I guess the other main question that the testimony raises in my mind, or maybe the message that I, the take-home message I can take from this testimony, is that the science is being presented in various ways. The science about the impact of hunting predators on conflicts with predators is being presented in different ways. And I would like to get a better picture, you know, and maybe go into a bit more depth about what the state of the science actually is. Because I've certainly, I remember very clearly Donnie saying that the impact of demographic change is not settled science. It's more speculative. So I don't think now is the time to try to do this because you're not prepared and we need Donnie with us. And but I think because the science is such a crucial part of our basis for decision-making here, that we need to be very clear about what how good we think the science is, how mature it is, how settled it is, how extensive the scientific basis is. Just so when we get to this next year, I think that ought to be part of the dialogue.
Mr. Chair, just to respond, absolutely we can bring this topic back and really take a look at the fundamental question here about how does predator harvest guidelines impact conflict. I would say that from what I can recall on the science in terms of with cougar management, that increased hunting opportunities may result in the younger age demographics. That's something that we had visited with you all about, and I think Donnie had brought forward at April when you all were considering your amendment to increase the guideline in areas that are occupied by wolves. The aspect that the real question, though, is whether or not that would increase in depredations. And we cautioned that we didn't think we could get there either way. There's certainly a publication that alludes to that. But when we look at the demographics of cougars that we remove from depredation hunts, it includes older females, older males, younger females, younger males. It's kind of in proportion of what we're harvesting. So we're not... our data set that's not done in an analytical study design doesn't necessarily match up with some of the hypotheses that are out there. There was a pretty controversial publication by Wilgus about looking at a retrospective analysis on wolves, for instance, over the northern Rocky Mountain states, and had indicated that perhaps increased removals because of conflict would result in more conflicts down the road. And, of course, it was done at a very large scale and didn't look at pack-by-pack behavior. It kind of mined the data set and looked at a trend analysis, and the pack may have been had some lethal removals in Idaho, and another area was in Wyoming. It had no relationship at all. So happy to have our carnivore staff bring this up and probably try to work with the director and the chair to figure out when the right time would be, but certainly over the next year.
Thanks, Nate. Any final comments on public testimony? Hearing none, thank you all for your testimony. It is very educational for us, and we appreciate the time you spend to share your thoughts with us, and we do take it all to heart. I can promise you that.